Hi everyone, I'm Gary Nall. This is an Empowerment Hour coming at you. In fact, today we're going to be interviewing live whistleblowers, but we're also going to ask anyone in the audience, nurses, physicians, people working in hospitals, nursing homes, people who have firsthand experience with the consequences of vaccine adverse events, meaning you've been there, you've seen the results. You'll be able to call in also. That's just the first part of our program. But we have more coming. We have two more whistleblowers. And tomorrow we have one of the leading whistleblowers for Facebook. You haven't heard this person before. This is not the same as the woman who has a PR firm and everyone's saying how great she is. Well, there's not so great from my perspective, but I'll tell you that story on tomorrow's show. So it's all about whistleblowing. But before we get there, health and nutrition, Harvard University, brand new study. Can the flavonoids help fend off forgetfulness? Well, a lot of people are losing memory. That's important. So the foundation of a healthy diet is a vibrant rainbow of fruits and vegetables. The rosy red strawberries and dark green spinach leaves or sunny yellow peppers, their colors often come from flavonoids. These are powerful plant chemicals called phytochemicals that appear to contribute to many aspects of health. And now a large Harvard study published online in Neurology shows that indeed they do play a role in protecting your cognition. Scientists evaluated the health data and self-reported diet of over 77,000 middle-aged men and women over a 20-year period. So it's a really outstanding long-term study. And then they looked to see how many of these people ate on a regular basis flavonoid-rich foods and whether participants reported cognitive changes in their 70s, such as difficulty remembering recent events or short-term list of items, remembering things from one second to the next, understanding instructions following a group conversation or a TV plot, finding their way around a familiar street. This is what it means to lose cognition. So along comes the importance of the flavanols. And I've mentioned that probably one of the best flavanols of all is quercetin, Q-U-E-R-E-C-T-I-N. Where do you get that? Well, you can take supplements, or you can eat onions and kale, outstanding sources, but also what are called flavones, F-L-A-V-O-N-E-S, such as lutein, L-U-T-E-O-L-I-N, and you get that from green chili peppers and celery. And hence one of the reasons drinking celery and cucumber and lemon juice every day, 1 to 2 glasses, not only stimulates the liver and the kidneys in the bloodstream, but is so good for you as far as helping your brain, turning off inflammation in your liver. That's good in your kidneys, in your heart, and in your brain. So these are the things that are important. But then you have also something that sounds similar is a flavonoids such as naringenin, N-A-R-I-G-E-N-I-N, in grapefruits and oranges. Hence, grapefruits eating, oranges eating, or more important for you because you're getting greater amounts, having a glass of orange grapefruit juice every day. You can throw tangerines in there as well. And then you have what is called flavon, F-L-A-V-A-N, 3-O-L, monomers. And in that, you're getting a specific chemical called catechins, C-A-T-E-C-H-I-N-S. Where do you get that? Strawberries, grapes, red wine. And then you have what are called antho, A-N-T-H-O, cyanidins, C-Y-A-N-I-N-S, as such as cyanidin, and you get that in blackberries, in red cabbage, and in raspberries, in black currants, and hence the importance of having elderberry concentrate, a tablespoon a day, some a pint of fresh blackberries, throw it into a smoothie or eating them. And then you have what are called polymers, P-O-L-Y-M-E-R-S. And the polymers are group, but within the polymers, you have what are called thea, T-H-E-A, flavones, F-L-A-V-I-N-S. Your green tea, your oolong tea, your black tea. Now, mind you, in a healthy diet, let's just say you had a lunch, and in the lunch you had some, let's say some stir-fried greens with some garlic and ginger, onions, pearl onions, and maybe put in a little bit of a miso paste, give it a nice, different and exotic flavor. You also had some quinoa, and maybe you put an oat tamarind or oat pomegranate sauce over that. Then you had some seaweed, nori, kombu, wakame, in that you can dice up some pickles and put a little wasabi mustard in, stir it around with some grapeseed oil, and that's terrific. And then you have starchy vegetables. Maybe it's some rutabaga, some yams, some turnips. Steam them, peel them, then dice them up. Nice, put a sauce on that. Now, just having, and even some beans, any kind of bean, but that is a perfect, perfect diet, perfect dish. You're getting everything I just mentioned in some degree in there, and then follow it off later with a fruit bowl. And then you put those fruits in there. So this is how easy it is. This is not complicated, especially if you want to keep your cognition as you age, because you're going to lose it otherwise. That is a certainty. And for every person that reaches 70 with full memory, there'll be a million that won't, you because of our lifestyle. So just remember, put more color into your diet. It'll help memory and cognitive processes as you age. And this study, over 20 years, with tens of thousands of people, showed it. And of course, where you are lacking in some areas of your diet, you can always take some supplementation. So it makes a difference, and it's good science. Remember, here are the foods that are most important for you. Brussels sprouts, strawberries, cauliflower, spinach, yams, sweet potatoes, blueberries, yellow, orange, winter squash, cooked spinach, cooked carrots, lightly, peaches, apricots, and plums, cantaloupe, tomato juice, applesauce, green, yellow peppers, broccoli, cabbage, tomato sauce, microgreens, sprouts, tomatoes themselves, grapefruit, celery, beets, baked potatoes are fine as long as you bake them at a lower temperature and coat them with coconut oil first, and then take a knife and make X's about a half inch deep. That'll allow for quicker cooking and more even cooking, allowing the internal heat to escape so it's fluffy throughout. Orange juice, all the juices, raw carrots, apples and pears, grapefruit juice, bananas, oranges, onions, apple cider vinegar, green tea, oolong tea, grapes, raisins. These are the things we should have in our diet on a regular basis. So your diet is A, doesn't have to be boring, and B, will be extremely helpful in your healing process. Now, I gave you a little longer on that than normal because it's like a classroom on the air. And the reason I spell things for people who are just tuning in is because we're heard all over the world. I mean, when I say all over the world, I mean all over the world. And English is not always most of these people's first language. And so I want to be able to have them be able to know how to spell something so then they can go in and do more homework on it if they wish to and see, for example, celery and healing and Google that, and suddenly you get all these scientific studies on it. So it's not just folk medicine, it's real science. Not that I'm not suggesting folk medicine doesn't have its place, it absolutely does. But a lot of people in this audience like to also know how much of this is backed up, and everything I share is backed up. Also, a separate study from University of Alberta, which is, of course, in Canada, the risk of ADHD diagnosis is lower in children who follow a healthy lifestyle. Now, this is something I know intimately because I did what is, I believe, the first study of its kind. I've done 49 clinical studies, all medically supervised, all with enormous amounts of data collected, frequently full medical exams, blood workups, everything, before and after, filmed everything before and after. In fact, have a split screen where you have entry and then you have exit. I'll just give you an example of why I do this. I wanted to see if what it once took 6 months to do, could I do it in 1 month? It was at 92nd Street. I'll bet there's someone listening right now who was in that study. This goes back about 12 years. If there is, I'd like to hear from you later in the program, see if what results you had and if you sustained them. So what I did is I took the same identical protocol that I'd used a year before over 6 months with terrific results, and I condensed it into 1 month. But this time, to get into the study was really challenging because it had to be with people who convinced me that they were going to do everything in this protocol every day, no cheating. And those who agreed to, I think it was 37 people, then good. And we had, again, they had to fill out all the different applications, how long you had to have arthritis for at least 7 years with drugs being taken with no relief to justify getting in the study. And so all that criteria is met. It took about 6 months to get this going. And then the very diet that I'm talking about, the items I gave you today, plus exercising, stress management, etc., were all done, plus supplementation. At the end of this, we filmed them all again. And there was one guy in particular. I don't know if you're listening, but it was a guy who wasn't going to come because it was too painful for him to walk down the street that was a very steep hill going from 3rd Avenue to 2nd Avenue. And we were right at the anti-aging center was at 80, where I did all of the lectures and all of the studies at 92nd and 2nd. And then he had to climb up this tall stairs. I think it's almost twice the size of what a normal stairs would be. And he just said it was too painful. This is when he was being filmed and he was hunched over and he had hip problems and his hips didn't move right. They were like frozen. He was on three different medications, COX-2 inhibitors. He was in still pain beyond that. He didn't want to go higher because it was dangerous. Because he was literally at the opiate level, OxyContin level, to reduce the pain. Now, 28 days later, they did 13 juices a day. But they did a whole detoxification process. But here is, he's up. First of all, first thing I notice, he's completely walking normal. No hip displacement in his gait and steps. And he said, I didn't know this was possible, but I have no pain. None. In fact, I didn't walk down the street. I ran down the street. He said, I haven't been able to run in years. And he said, I've lost all this excess weight. I bounded up these steps today. That's how good I feel. So now you have a before and after. Here you have on entry and exit. And I do that because I cannot tell you how many times I've worked with people. And then for some reason, whatever it may be, they have an opportunity to speak with the original attending physicians. And the doctor dismisses everything they've done. That's disempowering the individual, saying, you don't count. You're just a broken part. I'm the mechanic, I fix you. And when the person goes to say, but I don't have any of this illness, I haven't taken any medicine, well, it must be a spontaneous remission. Okay, let's just say the doctor's right, that every one of the 70,000 people I've counseled and helped, they were all spontaneous remissions. The 1,200 people who had end-stage AIDS, who got complete health back, the stage 4 cancers, the woman who was dying of chemotherapy I just helped, just went home a week ago. These are all spontaneous. Fine. Then let the same doctor show me a single spontaneous remission in all of medicine that they can prove. Let me see one. I got 70,000. Let me see one. This is the cult of the religion of orthodox medicine we're engaged with, unfortunately. So that's why I do this. So in any case, so I did a study on, this leads up to, I did a study on, is it possible with non-medical application, with lifestyle only, to improve substantially or reverse ADHD and ADD and autism. Now, autism was a separate study, but we were packed. And I can remember the first day, I held this at my studio at 83rd and Broadway, and they were bouncing off the walls. And the parents were frustrated because I'm teaching the parents, and the parents can't hear, kids are screaming. And one of those parents was a medical doctor, a pediatrician, and her three sons all had ADHD. And she says they bounce off the walls every morning, and when I get home, they're bouncing still. So she came out of curiosity. She was very orthodox. This was a real radical shift for her. Well, within 3 months, 95% of those kids were completely normalized. No symptoms of ADHD, including the woman. And I said, so what are you going to do? The medical doctor, not pediatrician, I said, what are you going to do with this? And she said, was for sure I'm not going to share this with anyone. I said, why is that? She said, I'd lose my license or I would lose my credibility. I thought for a moment, and then I asked her, I said, okay, so your three children benefited, your three boys benefited, they're normal. That takes a lot of pressure off you and your husband. Her husband was also a physician. I said, do you not think you have any more responsibility to share this with others, to help them? She says, then you should come into a hospital setting and see what it's like. And everything is tough. I don't intend to jeopardize my career. I've heard that a lot of times. So just understand something. The risk of a diagnosis of attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, ADHD, can be significantly lowered following a healthy lifestyle recommendations. Now, I've proven that, but that, I'm not saying that. The University of Alberta research team is saying that. Children who met 7 to 9 of the recommendations had a 58% lower risk of being diagnosed with ADHD than children who met only 1 to 3 recommendations of a healthy lifestyle. You get the sugar out, you get the caffeine out, you get the refined processed cereals out, you get the soft drinks out, carbonated beverages out, you get them exercising, give them a B-complex vitamin of 50 milligrams a day or 25 milligrams a day, give them some extra of the folic acid methylated and B12 methylated, and suddenly you've got a whole different brain chemistry going on, and it changes, and that's what they have found. So this is a long time ago I did my study, and now they're doing it, and they're publishing the results, and I commend them. I'm glad to see that they've got these results. That's it for today on Health Nutrition, because we got a packed show. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to go into studio. We're standing by is our guest, and I think we're going to have two guests standing by. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you from all over the world. Right now, live in our studios, we have Deborah from Concord, Pennsylvania, and she's a whistleblower. She's a board-certified physician assistant and hospital specialist, formerly employed at the Rochester Regional Health Center in upstate New York, and during her career when she worked in emergency medicine and urgent care and internal medicine and pediatrics, and her position in emergency room admission and examination, she had on the ground experience with COVID-related patients. She was in the front line, including those who had adverse reactions to the COVID vaccines. Now, due to her position regarding the medical interventions being undertaken during the pandemic, meaning vaccinations, and a reluctance of medical personnel to report adverse vaccine events, she was relieved of her work at the health center. She holds degrees from the State University of New York at Buffalo in clinical laboratory medicine and received her physician assistant degree at the Lock Haven University. Nice to have you with us today, Deborah.
Thank you for having me.
Very specifically, what are the primary reasons for you being relieved of your work at Rochester Regional Health? And did any of this have to do with your seeing adverse reactions, including up to death, if you experienced that, of people who have been vaccinated who otherwise did not have the comorbidities that would normally be associated with a higher risk of dying if you had COVID, if you had were over the age of 70 and you had multiple health challenges. Did that have anything to do with this at all?
I believe it did. I absolutely believe it did. The week after I came out publicly to tell the story, I was reprimanded in the office. Not about that specifically, but it was about a patient's family member supposedly complaining about me reporting her her reaction to the vaccine adverse event reporting system. And this individual reported me to our administrative leadership because I had reported her mother's case. Her mother asked me to do the report, but the family member was upset that I did that. So I was reprimanded for that. And then I do a week on and a week off. So the following week that I came back to work after that, I was brought into the office again and reprimanded about another complaint, not of the patient, but of a individual that was visiting the patient at the time. So it seemed like every single time I came back to work, I was brought into the office and reprimanded for one reason or another. So I knew termination was coming. They were just kind of trying to look for a reason to terminate me. But never once were the complaints from the individual patient. They were from, like I said, family member or friends involved that didn't like that I was reporting their hospitalizations to the vaccine adverse event reporting system, even though the patients themselves asked me to. There's a lot of misinformation about reporting out there. There's a lot of confusion, a lot of fear surrounding it. But I do what my patient asks me to do because that's who's under my care.
Okay. When you were at the health center, you and your colleagues observed many people coming due to COVID-related complications from both the wild infection, but also from the vaccines. We hear the president accusing the unvaccinated as the cause of hospital beds filling up, and he constantly repeats the mantra that the vaccines are perfectly safe and effective for every American without exception. But what is really being observed on the ground among the healthcare providers? You're one, you were there from the beginning. And what is the approximate percent of people coming in for emergency care for either COVID complications or for vaccine reactions?
I think that is the majority of the hospitalizations at this point. So this is not a pandemic of just the unvaccinated. We are seeing people hospitalized fully vaccinated with COVID as well. They are also ending up in our ICUs. And we are also seeing an unprecedented amount of people coming into the hospital fully vaccinated who are having other problems. On a daily basis, the percentages of vaccinated individuals in the hospital versus unvaccinated are significantly higher than the population rate of which people are vaccinated. We need to look at consumption of care services for people who are vaccinated versus unvaccinated, because on an average day, I would say about 80% of the patients in the hospital are vaccinated, and that's not the percentage of people in the surrounding communities that are vaccinated. It's only about 50%. But the people utilizing healthcare services, especially hospitalization, seem to be the vaccinated population because they're having medical problems that may or may not be associated with the vaccine. But if we don't report these as we are required to do, we will never know the long or short-term safety of these vaccines or even the efficacy. They're not reporting even hospitalizations of fully vaccinated patients with COVID to VAERS. I have observed many patients who were hospitalized that were not reported, both to the state and to the vaccine adverse event reporting system. So I would ask our current leadership administration, how do they know that these vaccines are safe and effective for all if the reporting is not being done? because I'm observing it firsthand, and I believe it is happening in all hospitals across the United States.
Okay. Did you see at any time young, healthy individuals, even teenagers or people in their 20s who did not have obesity, cancer, heart disease, develop any blood clotting or heart inflammation or other conditions that would not be normal for them, but after taking the vaccines, these appeared?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It is not just older populations or those with comorbidities. I think what happens is when those types of individuals with lots of comorbidities come in with new problems after vaccination, it becomes very easy for people to pass the blame onto their underlying health conditions and not the vaccine they just received. But when you get individuals who are young and healthy with no medical problems, who don't smoke, don't drink, they're of normal weight, coming in with new fluid surrounding their lungs or their heart with no other explanation or thing that was done other than the vaccine, I cannot understand how anybody can say it may not be that it's not due to it or that it may not be a contributory cause. We had many patients who fit that exact description, young individuals, some of which who are now disabled and can no longer work because they can't go up a flight of stairs because of the inflammation that occurred either in their lungs or their heart or both. We've had many patients who came in with blood clots following their vaccination. And people have this idea that it's just the Johnson & Johnson. Blood clots are occurring with all of the vaccines that we have on the market right now in the United States. I have many patients that I've reported who've had blood clots following them. Even patients who are already on blood thinners, who develop blood clots despite the blood thinners. That is also something I have reported.
Deborah, we also have been told that any adverse events will generally occur within the first 48 hours. However, my experience speaking with doctors and nurses across the country is that you could have adverse events occurring 3 months, 6 months, in the case of autism, 2 years, 3 years later. Have you seen delayed adverse events also happening in the vaccinated?
Absolutely. That's actually, I would say, more of the norm that we're seeing. You know, some people do have anaphylaxis or immediate reactions. They pass out after vaccination. But more often than not, we are seeing people coming in 4, 6, 8 weeks, sometimes even longer, with new conditions that have no explanation for their cause, many of which are immune type of reactions, such as new types of, you know, pneumonias and septic illnesses that are very much impactful on our immune system, that they'll come in gravely ill with infections, weird things. One of the things we recently saw was an outbreak of hand, foot, and mouth disease in fully vaccinated adults. We don't see that. I have never seen that in the nearly 20-year career that I have had, a hand, foot, and mouth disease in an adult. But we are seeing that, and it's only in the vaccinated people. We also saw an outbreak of RSV, respiratory syncytial virus, which is a respiratory illness caused by a virus that we most often see in children, not in adults. And we had a string of adults who required hospitalization, one of whom ended up getting intubated and required ventilatory support in our ICU. That is unprecedented. We need explanation for why that is happening. And interestingly, that has only occurred in vaccinated subjects. We did not have one unvaccinated person in the hospital with RSV. And I had brought that up to leadership, to some of our infectious disease doctors, and there was no explanation. I said, this is odd. Doesn't anybody want to investigate this further? But they don't. I don't know how
also, also, the CDC's vaccine injury and death reporting system is far from perfect. It's a passive surveillance tool that is many flaws, and it's been criticized many times in the past, even by professors at Harvard. What is your experience reporting on the Veris Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, and tell us why so many health practitioners are reluctant or refuse to even use it. And if that doesn't happen, then the actual number of injured, the actual number of deaths, which are necessary to ultimately determine, is this really a safe and effective vaccine? And it's way too early to determine that at this point. You have to allow at least 3 years for proper epidemiological review. And yet, they're bad figures. Everyone acknowledges that. Even Harvard said you're lucky to get a 1 to 2% accuracy, which means about, you know, you're dealing with 98 to 99% inaccurate, meaning it's underreported. Now, we had a Dr. Rose on this program, a highly respected, world-renowned person in molecular biology and immunology. And she stated just this week on Tuesday on the Progressive Commentary Hour that looking carefully with two other scientist colleagues at the Israeli data, that up to 90 to 95% of all hospitalizations were from the vaccinated, not the unvaccinated, and the death and severe illness, including those who were vaccinated who were COVID negative prior to the vaccine, they became COVID positive. So when you're looking at millions upon millions of people who did not have COVID, got the vaccine and now have COVID immediately thereafter, well then how can you say that the vaccine is responsible for keeping you from being infected? And this is not in a small group. We're talking about one of the most highly vaccinated groups in the world. It's a human study petri dish, because Israel doesn't have a lot of citizens compared to other countries. But when you have people over the age of 65 and over 95% have been vaccinated, it's a good indication they've had all the vaccines. Now they're getting vaccines and the boosters, and they're still getting sick. So they're suggesting more and more and more and more, an endless supply of boosters. It's insane. But then they took a look at the CDC system, and here's the figure they gave me. 204,000 Americans, they claim, have died because of the vaccine. And over, altogether, I added it up, figure she gave live on the air, 600,000 seriously injured, meaning hospitalization, permanent injury, Guillain-Barré syndrome, and that doesn't go away easily, and all these other conditions, Bell's palsy, and neurological disorders, gangrene, a leg amputation, a paralysis. And yet, I don't know of a single place in the United States, maybe it exists, where the pharmacist, the nurse, the public health official, or physician sits down with you and says, okay, here are the positives of taking the vaccine, lays them out. Here are the negatives of taking the vaccine, the side effects, lays them out. And then asks, which do you want to do? Now that's informed choice. Give the best and worst that something could happen. And then you look at a person's age, their state of health, do they have comorbidities? And then you try to protect those who are most at risk. And that's the advice that you give. I haven't seen any of that given. So what you're telling us is there's a whole hidden story that the major media does not want you to know about. And they're hiding it. And anyone discussing it is then attacked. So what is your experience with the accuracy or the consistency of in your units where you have firsthand, not hearsay, firsthand experience, where you're telling us, this is my experience, this is what I saw, so it's true. Tell us that, please.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with Dr. Rose's assessment. As a firsthand, frontline healthcare worker who has seen COVID and has also taken care of many patients with potential vaccine injuries, I can tell you underreporting is rampant. As an individual, if you decide to do a report, it's going to take you anywhere from 10 to 15 minutes, maybe longer, to do the individual report. And you will also commit to 60-day follow-up reports that need to be done. And in your average day, you know, you sometimes don't have that length of time to be able to do these reports. So your choices are you do them after your shift or you do them on your days off, which is what I did. And because so many people who are fully vaccinated are coming into the hospitals with new conditions, you may need to do upwards of 10 reports a day. And that's just not possible. not only that, but there's no education that went out when these vaccines were rolled out to assure that providers, physicians, PAs, nurse practitioners knew what to report, who to report to, and when they would get a patient coming in following vaccination. It just wasn't even discussed. There was no communication from leadership, from the FDA, from the CDC. To say that any medical therapy, whether it be a surgery, medication, a vaccine, is safe and effective for all populations, all age groups, is just ludicrous. We have no medical therapies on the market that are safe and effective for all anywhere. Even a Tylenol over the counter can be harmful in certain subjects. So to completely deny that there's any possibility of vaccine problems is just absolutely ludicrous. I completely believe that there is gross underreporting. And when you look at Dr. Rose's evaluation and the numbers of vaccine reports that have already been done in the United States, it's astonishing. These vaccines should have been pulled off the market and evaluated as to why we are seeing such unprecedented numbers of vaccine injuries. They are accounting for more than all vaccines combined in history. Why are we not stopping these vaccines to try to evaluate what is going on before more people get harmed, before our children then become the victims of injury?
Deborah, it's because there's different agenda. Real quick answer. Is this your singular experience, but in the communication you have in the front lines with medical doctors and other nurses, has this been feedback similar to yours from other health professionals, yes or no?
I'm sorry, what was your question?
Is this what you're telling us just your individual impressions from witnessing firsthand, or have there been others that you work with and communicate with who would similarly say similar to what you have said?
Absolutely. There are many that I work with that would completely validate what I am reporting. But many of them are afraid to come forward because we have been reprimanded and told in emails that we speak positively about the vaccine, we could potentially lose our jobs or be reported to our state licensing authorities.
And that's exactly what's happening. Unfortunately, we're out of time for this segment, but I thank you for your courage, for standing up. And you're telling us the truth that the administration, both houses of Congress, Senate and the House, our entire media, including the liberal media, have refused, and the alternative media have refused to share with us. It's unfortunate that we don't have freedom of debate, freedom of discussion, but that's also been shut down. Oh, and by the way, just today, a mother is escorted from a hospital in handcuffs, put in jail, because she refused to leave her recovering daughter's side. And that was in violation of COVID rules. And the mother is a grandmother, an elderly mother in Jacksonville, Florida, spent a night in jail for violating a local hospital's COVID rules for refusing to leave the bedside of her daughter, who had just undergone brain surgery after suffering a stroke. So that's how much compassion that hospital staff had, and that's how little compassion everyone in power has in the United States. That is not uncommon. Thank you very much. Now let's go over and say hello to a nurse. I will not mention her name, but let's just say hello to her. How many years have you been practicing nursing?
I've been in nursing over 40 years, Gary.
And I'm assuming that, like the nurse you just heard, that Deborah, that you have also experienced working with patients in these institutional settings?
I am currently still employed as a home care nurse, although when I come off my short-term disability, I doubt that they'll have me back since I won't be vaccinated.
Okay, now you developed COVID.
I did. I contracted COVID in August, and then I listened to my doctor, my PCP, and took a dose of remdesivir, and I became violently ill with nausea, vomiting, and diarrhea, and I ended up in the ER. And the care there was the worst I've ever experienced in my career. As Deborah was saying, there's no more scientific method in the way of looking at patients. There was no true interviewing. It's like they had a rubber stamp and this is how they were going to treat me, which was basically not treating me. I had no fluids despite my dehydration, and they were just going to send me off to a hospital. Fortunately for me, my friends got in touch with you and with Luann, and I ended up leaving against medical advice. I just knew at that point that I was going to be dying. I just felt my life energy leaving me. So I did go to someone who was also trained by you, and I followed your protocol, Gary. First of all, my markers, one of the large, with the highest level of death is with people who have COVID and have high markers of something called D-dimer. Usual level is 229 and below. Mine was almost 4,000. They wanted me to start on a conventional anticoagulant medication, which if you look up the side effects, if you start bleeding, they can't stop the bleeding, and you'd have to go for surgery. So I would not take that. I went on your protocol, and your protocol included vitamins, supplements,
Don't go into the protocol. Because each of the protocols is individual, so I don't want someone thinking that it would be the same thing for them. Did the protocol save your life?
The protocol did save my life. Okay. My D-dimer is now within normal limits. I never had any side effects of any of the COVID except fatigue, which is still improving with the protocol that I'm on right now.
All right. So what message of life and what message of the community that you've worked diligently and honestly for 45 years in, what message has this given you?
The message that it's given me, well, first of all, with working in the community, I see what they're doing because I've had patients who have had side effects from the COVID. And when I have gone to the doctors and had the family go to the doctors to inquire about the vaccine, they will not hear of it. A patient who has a neurological event 4 to 8 weeks after the vaccine, they're trying to attribute it to things like ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease, or Parkinson's, which is, they are both insidious. They don't happen. They occur over months and years. And they were trying to say that the symptoms, serious, severe symptoms, were from those chronic illnesses, not from the vaccine, and they will not look at it. There were clotting events, bleeding events, and they're not willing to look at it. The scientific method is gone.
Would you say at this moment, for whatever reasons, we won't ascribe motive at this point, but the simple fact is that American medicine is not engaged in medical science and real healing the way it historically has and should?
Absolutely. And there have been conventional doctors that I have commented to them about the loss of this whole concept of scientific method and about the fact that they're lying. And they've agreed, but they won't step forward.
Well, I'm glad to see you're well, completely recovered, and now you have a new perspective on life. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Gary. Bye-bye.
I'm Gary Nall. We're not finished. We've got a lot more to share with you, but we're going to take a break. We're 45 minutes into our program. Please stay with us. Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. We try to look at things honestly, objectively, fairly, and most importantly, look for what we can validate. I never see something through the lens of political bias, some form of ideological agenda. I just look at the truth, wherever it is. And that's what I hope that we'll begin to do. At least many people are. That's why there's some resistance. I'll get to that in a moment. Richard Gale's on the line. We have something important to discuss. But just real quick, we try to offer a very good special. And by the way, the premiere, the world premiere is in just a couple days, Saturday, noon. We did one test premiere. in the beginning, the rest of it was good, but the beginning was rough because someone came in who didn't know that we had our own technicians and all ready to go and started playing it. And when we already were playing Coming Attractions, oh, what a mess. But we finally got into the film. This time there'll be no one will be able to do that. We'll have the whole film. I'll then do a discussion on best places to live in America and why, based upon all the new information that I've collected in the last 6 weeks. Richard Gale will be joining me. And then two of the world's leading environmentalists will be on, Professor Guy McPherson. And the other one, I'll just say that there is no person I know on earth that knows more about trees than this multiple PhD. All right? It'll be a wonderful, probably set aside 5 hours. Okay? And it'll be a premiere. So go to GaryAndAll.com to join us. We only have like 9 places left and we're full. Now, separately, I was asked if I would do a good special today. Well, I've never done a special quite this good. So here's what I'm going to give you. I'm going to give you the vitamin C I take every day, Supremacy Extra, the 450 gram. That's the big size. And there's 112 servings in it. And this has got the, it tastes delicious, actual pineapple juice. It's magnesium ascorbate, potassium ascorbate, ascorbic acid, calcium ascorbate, ascorbyl palmitate, acerola berries, citrus bioflavonoids, hesperidin, which is one of those bioflavonoids, amla fruit in and of itself, that's phenomenal, AMLA, just look it up. Look at all the science behind amla, and you're getting that. So you're getting what many consider the finest vitamin C there is, and you're getting a whole lot of good vitamin C in a single serving, 1,248 milligrams in a single serving. But that's just one of the things you're getting today. You're also getting something different. And I haven't given this before. It's eye care. It's eye care. It's a phenomenal product. It has L-taurine and zinc and selenium and alpha-lipoic acid, big amounts, 200 milligrams, 400 milligrams taurine, quercetin, 200 milligrams, bilberry extract, ginkgo biloba, 100 milligrams. It has xanthine, 20 milligrams, lutein, 10 milligrams, lycopene, 10 milligrams, resveratrol. It's got all that. It's specifically to help enhance our nutrient intake for our eyes. It's that simple, all right? Do you care about your eyes? Then eye care can help. Also, the documentary, Supercharge Your Immune System. This is a time when we have to know how to build up our immune system. This does that. And then another documentary, Natural Eye Care. So for people who want to know the best of the best, I have on these ophthalmologists and others doing a whole in-depth examination of how to have all of our eye issues dealt with by the experts in the field, from light therapies, etc., cranial sacral therapies, nutrition, for nearsightedness, farsightedness, glaucoma, astigmatism, you name it, macular degeneration, all of this is covered by the experts in this documentary. So you're getting all of this. Now, normally this would run you over $209. It's only $99. For all that, just call this number and ask for the Supremacy Special. You're getting 2 documentaries. You're getting 2 products. And you're only paying $99. Call 877-627-5065. That's 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. Or call Neil at the Vitamin Closet, 646-926-5430. 646-926-5430. That's a phenomenal package. Now, real quick, we have Dr. Roy Spicer on because a lot of people are concerned about the quality of the air they breathe, especially in offices and theaters, even in their own car when they're outside. And if you saw me coming back from the anti-aging clinical study we just finished 2 weeks ago, you would have saw that I'm on the plane and I've got a special mask and visor, cap, gloves, but I also have 2 air ionizers around my neck. So I've asked Dr. Roy Spicer to come on because we're going to offer a great special today. Today, they're $99. I don't have a lot. I was only able to get 40 of them. But if you want those, you'll call the same 877-627-5065 to get yours. And Roy Spicer's here to tell us what it will do. Nice to have you with us today. Roy, what will the portable ionizer that a person is small, that fits right on a, around their neck, and even when you go to dinner, you can put it right out on the table. What does it do?
Well, first, the major concern is these ultra-fine infectious particles that are often transmitted in indoor environments. So the personal air purifier prevents many of these pollutants from being inhaled. The studies that were done on this piece of equipment was conducted at University of Cincinnati and was published in the Indoor Air Journal in 2005, and it documented that the personal air purifier is the most powerful stationary unit demonstrated at an extremely high particle removal efficiency. Now, this is a quote. And the device increased removal of particles 90% in the breathing space within a foot or two radius in 5 to 6 minutes. Within 10 minutes, it reduced the particle counts almost 100%. And these are small ultrafine particles around 0.3 microns. So the device is very light. You wear it around your neck. It only weighs about 2 ounces. It's very small. It's a lithium battery operated. It runs about 20 hours. And basically, you can have fresh air anywhere you go. It's the most advanced ionic air purification device that I've reviewed. So in addition to wearing a mask, which are variable protection, wearing a personal protection device, the personal air purifier, prevents a high percentage of particles from being breathed in. That includes dust, pollen, germs, smoke, and mold. And they're most effectively removed in your breathing space within a foot to 2 foot radius. So I highly recommend this to carry with you wherever you go.
Thank you. And you can get them. I only have 40. Call, and I won't be able to get any more in for probably the next 6 months. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. Richard Gale. Richard, I just have one issue, and that is one of the people in this audience who doesn't listen to the program to learn anything, but rather to be hypercritical. It's a small little group. Fine. I have no problem with that. But he made a statement. He said, if Gary just mentioned that all adults should get the vaccine, then that's good. Okay. Easy enough to say, right? All adults should get the vaccine. How simple is that? Everyone agrees, right? All the people in government agree. Oh, but wait, there are exceptions. You don't have to get the vaccine if you're a member of Congress or their family. Well, then how would we view those adults? Would they also be viewed as domestic terrorists or reprehensible in some way? Just curious. But you have some other thoughts on that. Would you share your thoughts, please?
Yeah, sure. So this listener is really parroting just the CDC's propaganda, because this on the CDC website, it states very clearly, and this quote, okay, COVID-19 vaccination is recommended for all people aged 12 years and older, including people who are pregnant, lactating, trying to get pregnant now, or might become pregnant in the future. And here there's no exclusion criteria being given whatsoever, no contraindications being mentioned, not even the PEG allergies associated with the mRNA vaccines that contribute to the anaphylaxis cases, although, and this is, we could just see where the head and the tail of the federal health agencies aren't even connected to the same being, but although the FDA and Pfizer and Moderna's own vaccine package inserts contraindicates that those with any PEG allergies should not be getting the vaccine. So the CDC is up to its own shenanigans. I have a friend, you happen to know her, she's a healthcare practitioner as well, and she received a medical exemption that was approved by the state, New York State health authorities. And as we know, New York is probably the worst in the nation at the moment for legislating vaccines for everyone. And that's because she has a pacemaker. And so worldwide, there are about 1 million people with pacemakers. Reuters put out a report some years back that the number of Americans getting pacemakers is increasing dramatically. The other thing I would just say is that, the contraindications as being reported by national health authorities is not uniform worldwide. So if we take a look at other countries and what other nations are saying, we'll take just Australia, for example, and their recommendations. So if anybody has a history of anaphylaxis to any component of a Pfizer Moderna shot, or even if you've had a serious adverse event from the first dose, you should not get the vaccines. And the CDC is not even stating that. They're not even stating that if you've had a serious adverse event from the first dose, you should not be getting the second. And then for the adenovirus RNA vector vaccines with J&J, you know, if you have a history of allergies to any component, also, but including polysorbate 80. And interesting, the U.S. and the CDC, they decided to rewrite their contraindications to polysorbate allergies. Now, this is not the case for if you look at any other vaccine, the MMR vaccine, flu vaccines, the DPT, that also include polysorbate 80. It's right there, and it's on the CDC's own sites for those other vaccines that if you have a polysorbate 80 allergies, you're contraindicated. You should not be getting the vaccine. So, again, it's just another example. But, again, the Australian government site, health site, is if you have a history of capillary leak syndrome, meaning repeated flares of, like, massive leakage of plasma in the blood vessels, do you have thrombosis or heparin-induced thrombocytopenia, a history of miscarriages, adverse events for the first dose, do not get the vaccine. Should not be given, okay? So these are all related to, and just for people to realize, these are all related to spike protein in the virus also. So cardiovascular tissues are generally cells that express this ACE2 receptor in your lungs and in the heart. They're at risk of an actual SARS-CoV-2 infection, okay? Because we're seeing many of these also in people are getting the infection. But the vaccines are expressing this very same spike protein. So these adverse effects that we're witnessing and what our guest Deborah has shared are completely expected. And this was first observed in about the half dozen or more early studies and attempts to make a coronavirus vaccine before the pandemic. It's going back some years. But this was the very reason why all these vaccine clinical trials were discontinued and shelved. Of course, they were done in animal studies, which these vaccines bypassed. But even if we just go back, the one thing the CDC does says, and this is, we have to really think of this almost in a comical, stupid way, but a sad way, because on the CDC's site, they are expecting the person receiving the vaccine to indicate to the vaccine provider before they get the vaccine, you're supposed to indicate to them this running list of things you might have, meaning you have a fever, you have any bleeding disorder, or you're taking blood thinners. If you immunocompromised, you're taking any medications that affects the immune system. If you're pregnant or planning to get pregnant, or you're breastfeeding, if you've ever fainted in association with injection, you know, being unspecified what injections, you're expected to tell the vaccination provider. They don't ask you whether you've had any of these conditions. And why would they be listed? This is, again, the same CDC site in which I quoted the other stuff. Why would this be listed unless there's a risk, unless there's a higher risk? So I would just make a remark that there was an interesting paper in the International Journal of Tuberculosis and Lung Disease. It was done by a large international group of mostly European institutions that was dealing with the vaccine-induced prothrombotic immune thrombocytopenia. I can't pronounce it, forget it. Okay. And it says, given that the vaccination is a preventive measure only, safety requirements need to be higher. Safer alternative vaccines should be considered. And they're speaking about the mRNA vaccines here. Safer alternative vaccines need to be considered for people with risk of any of these certain heart conditions and clotting conditions that they may have. So,
Richard, what you're saying is there are an awful lot of people who medically are not in a position where they should get the vaccine, and that's mainstream medicine and science saying not every adult should get the vaccine.
Right. And we haven't even touched on, we can do that later, but just on pregnancy.
On our next program, we'll deal with pregnant women because we have brand new information on that, not the least of which is Dr. Rose stating on the program on Tuesday night that when a study came out saying pregnant women will have no problem with miscarriage, then she said that in one of the graphs they found the actual statement that they were really using the third trimester where miscarriages are rare, but when she excluded the third trimester, and when most miscarriages come in the first and second trimester, it was 87% of those who received the vaccine ended up with miscarriages. And therefore, it was statistically really significant, but that's how the numbers were played to make it seem like none of that existed. But we'll get into should pregnant women be vaccinated on our next discussion. Thank you, Richard Gale. Everyone, we're out of time. A call to make a reservation for the premiere is a long day. A lot of information is going to be shared and hopefully inspiring and to you to get on board of helping save our planet and your own health. Go to GaryNall.com. Have a nice day, everyone.